system.
Yeah. Well, it maybe didn't come to you because I was looking at you and
requesting. You suggest
yesterday.
I'd like to bring the House Committee on General Government and Consumer Protection to order for the 76th Legislative Assembly in the 2012 regular session. And with that, I'm going to open an organizational meeting for the purposes of adopting committee rules.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisnant.
I move that we adopt the House Committee on General Government and Consumer Protection rules for the 76th Legislative Assembly 12-12.
Representative Wisnant has moved that the House Committee on General Government and Consumer Protection for the 76th Legislative Assembly adopt the model committee rules for the 2012 regular session as presented. Any discussion? Any objection? Rules are adopted. And we'll start out with a quick introduction of committee members for this session, and we'll start out to my far right. That would be... Would you like to introduce yourself, Representative?
Brian Clem. I'm under some scenario of redistricting now the representative for this physical location you're sitting in, but I don't think that's effective for another year. So you can, if you somehow were registered to vote at the Capitol, someday you would get to vote for me, but not currently. Otherwise, it's other portions of Salem that I represent.
Thanks for that, though.
Yeah. I don't know how this redistricting thing works.
Details. My mistake for starting to the far right. Representative Cameron.
Representative Kevin Cameron, represent South Salem, Obsville, and Turner.
Jefferson Smith, representing East Portland.
Move to the far left.
Representative Jim Widener, represent primarily Yamhill County and into Hillsborough, and who knows, I might represent Representative Clem, too.
Greg Matthews, representative of House District 50, which is majority of Gresham.
Patrick Sheehan, House District 51, which is pretty much the same as it was before redistricting.
Good afternoon, Gene Wisnett, State Representative, House District 53, which is Deschutes County.
And I am Paul Holvey. I'm a State Representative from District 8, which is South Eugene and west to Bonita, Crow Applegate, Lorain, Notai, Walton, and south to Douglas County. So with that,
I miss you.
I would like to open a public hearing on House Bill 4131 and call up Representative Comp.
Hey, what's going on? What are you doing?
Now I'm going to go right here. Back to the order because I don't see Representative Bro here. Good afternoon.
Other members.
Good afternoon, Mr. Co-Chair Holvey and Co-Chair Wisnett. I will introduce myself first, then I have a couple of the comments off script. And members of the committee, for the record, I'm State Representative Betty Kopp, and I represent House District 22, which covers Woodburn, Jervis, and North Salem. And I bet you, if you had a woman sitting on this committee, you wouldn't be saying, I missed you. And some other things that are tolerated in this committee. Anyway, I used to be a principal.
We used to have a woman on this committee. So let you know. And we have a committee administrator.
Good. Parity is important. I'm sorry, I'll be serious.
You'll have to talk to somebody else about that.
We're getting deeper and deeper. In 2011, our legislature passed House Bill 2020, which required, with some exceptions, that the Department of Administrative Services work with state agencies to achieve a manager-to-staff ratio of 11-1 for the next biennium. I'm here today to support House Bill 4131, which will push state government to more quickly reduce unnecessary bureaucracy. That way, we can find savings to prioritize critical state services like education, helping our seniors stay in their homes and keep our state workers working. I value the services of our state workers, but we need to ensure that the money is focused on staff who provide those direct services to Oregonians and not excessive middle management. This bill will require agencies that have not attained their 11-to-1 ratios by July 1 of 2012 to increase their staff to manager ratios by 1. This is simple, straightforward, and needs the bill is very clear. Oregon is struggling through a great recession. State funds are limited. Oregonians are depending on us, every one of us, to make sure that we use careful use of our dollars and to make sure that we continue to provide the services that folks need. I'm sure all of you get the same calls that I get from people, whether it's about reverse mortgages, home care, all the above, that their services are being cut. We know this, and it hurts. We need to protect our schools and prioritize public safety as well as taking care of our seniors. In this budget environment, the only way we can come close to providing those services and doing our best to protect services is to make sure that every penny is spent wisely. That is being done by reducing bureaucracy, middle management, and we will save precious dollars so we can prioritize those services. I appreciate your consideration for this bill. I urge you to pass it to the floor with an aye vote. In these tough times, and many of our state's residents, no matter who you represent, are working hard to make ends meet and to survive. Our constituents depend on us, and I ask for your support by moving this bill and helping us get one step closer. Thank you, and I can take any questions you might have.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony, and I'm not seeing any questions. Representative Smith.
Thanks, Representative Kopp. This is helpful. Do we have any information about why we think that implementation of House Bill 2020 has been tough or slow? I mean, I care about the bill. I carried the bill for what it's worth. But do we have any information about that?
You will have a person here from DAS to talk about that. But my thought is, as we work through the budget, and I serve on the full Ways and Means, we and the governor, we are asking these agencies to cut and cut and cut again. And so I think they're so busy reorganizing their structures and figuring out how to cover the people that they've had to cut. And so it's going to take time when you have that many employees in an agency to ensure your organizational structure is redesigned to meet these needs.
Thanks.
And for the committee's information, I know Representative Dimbro, and there'll be other people to testify on this bill as well as somebody phoning in, but it was my intent to close this public hearing as soon as Representative Comp is done, and then we'll reopen it on our agenda. Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My friend and colleague, Representative Comp, do you concur that this should happen in the Department of Education and also in school districts?
It is my perspective this should happen in all public service areas.
Thank you.
Representative Comp, thank you very much for your testimony. I appreciate you taking the time to come down and speak to us on this bill.
Thank you, and thank you for allowing me to introduce myself, because I missed that in my House Education Committee, so thank you.
Thank you. With that, I'm going to close public hearing on House Bill 4131 and open a public hearing on House Bill 4117. Jan, could you give us a brief description of the bill?
And Mr. Chair, committee members, this is the pre-need funeral bill that the committee heard during the interim twice and had a full public hearing on January 20th, and we heard from the Department of Consumer and Business Services and a number of stakeholders speaking in support of the bill. Before you have submitted testimony from Rick Bennett of AARP, from Chad Dressel House, American Funeral and Cemetery Trust Services, from J.C. Aubrey and Ty Cochran from the Cemetery Association of Oregon, and from Andrea Oxton, representing Legal Aid Services of Oregon. And we have two people signed up to testify. There is no fiscal impact and no revenue impact on this bill.
Thank you. And if we could have David Tapman and Wally Ordeman. Good afternoon. If you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
Will do. Thank you. Co-Chair Holby and Co-Chair Wisnett, my name is David Tapman, member of the committee. I'm the administrator for the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities, and I was just before this committee last month when we talked about this bill. The only thing I have to add is the bill has now been officially introduced, and it's House Bill 4117. My comments that I made last time are still applicable. I've provided written testimony. It's virtually the same testimony. I value how important your time is and how much you have to do. So I just urge your support for your committee bill and stand ready to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Mr. Ordeman.
Thank you, Chair Holby, Chair Wisnett, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Wally Ordeman, and I'm a funeral director from Albany and the legislative chair for the Oregon Funeral Directors Association. I am convinced that the time spent assembling this legislation has been time well spent by a number of different parties. House Bill 4117 tightens up some oversight that will ultimately protect the consumer and is not overly burdensome to funeral directors. The funeral directors watch things like this. Your community funeral directors watch things like this so that trusts, the oversight and the regulation of trusts, if they become too burdensome, too cumbersome for funeral homes to offer, then pre-need trusts, a funding vehicle for prepaying funeral plans, will go away. And that is not so good for the consumer. And I don't feel like this crosses that line. And the Oregon Funeral Directors supports the legislation, and we urge its passage.
Thank you very much. Questions for these two gentlemen?
Thank you. Just I really appreciate both of you working on this and bringing this bill to its present condition and bringing it before this committee to act on. I think it's a good bill. And for the record and the public out there as well, we did hold a hearing previously in January on this issue, which has a lot of information in the record for that particular day that people are also able to look at to see some of the background. So this seems like a short public hearing, but it's just because this committee has heard this issue a couple of times and it's been fairly well vetted, and appreciate your conciseness with this, because this is a short day, and I think we're going to go ahead and do it.
Can I have one quick question before?
Representative Smith.
Thanks very much, Mr. Chair. Just for the record, can we get the section, the penalty is not in the bill. We had a very brief hallway conversation. Can we just get in the record where we are referred to as far as penalties for not complying?
Yes. Co-chairs, Representative Smith, the issue that the Representative Smith is referring to is Section 13 addresses what we would call anti-fraud provisions, and it strengthens our ability to go after fraudulent conduct. And we will continue to work on issues like this with our counterparts in the industry. Most of the good, honest people want to make sure that doesn't happen, and so we will engage in further dialogue throughout the year. However, I do believe that generally, if you look at ORS 97, 948, that provides for the director's authority to take enforcement action. It's very explicit, and it gives us penalty authority the ability to issue an administrative fine for every violation, as long as the bill incorporates this new language into section 97923 to 97949, which section 12 says it does, I think we're okay with that. But again, we will continue to work on this, fine-tune it, and if I've misspoken or if we misstated something, we'll probably come back and talk about it in the fall.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4117 and open a work session on House Bill 4117. Representative Wisnett.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4117 to the floor of a due pass recommendation.
Representative Wisnett moves House Bill 4117 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? I customarily have a roll call vote. So if we could have that.
Representative Cameron.
Aye.
Rep. Clem.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Representative Widener.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith.
Aye.
Co-Chair Wisnett.
Aye.
Co-Chair Holby.
Aye.
House Bill 4117, having received the required votes, is passed to the floor. The due pass recommendation. Anybody want to carry this bill?
Widener recommended.
I don't.
New guy.
Volunteered.
New guy.
No.
Come on. New guy.
Widener volunteered.
New guy.
Took his hand up.
No? Yes? I'll carry the bill then. 4117.
Oh, new guy.
With that, I think I'm going to move down to the next item. Is that
4115?
Yeah, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 4115. And the purpose of this work session is to adopt amendments, and we intend on having a public hearing on this bill on Friday, I believe. Is that correct, Jan?
Friday is scheduled, yes.
So we wanted to do that just to make sure people knew what to talk about when they came back.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisnett.
I move -1 into House Bill 4115, amendments dated January 25th, 2012.
Representative Wisnett moves -1 amendments to House Bill 4115. Discussion? Is there any opposition to adopting the amendment? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted. And I'll close the work session on House Bill 4115. So do we see? Yes,
Michael's,
we do.
Michael's here.
With that on schedule, we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 4131.
I'd like to dial in Gary Hicks.
And we will stand at ease for a moment while we dial in somebody to testify. Consumer Protection, along with Co-Chair Representative Wisnett, and we are in a public hearing on House Bill 4131, and we will be talking to you briefly, but we're going to start with Representative Dimbro, if you'd care to introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Co-Chair Holvey, Co-Chair Wisnan, honorable colleagues, I'm Michael Dimbro. I represent House District 45, Northeast Portland,
out to Park Rose, including the beautiful city within a city of Maywood Park. And I'm here bringing before you House Bill 4131, which is really a very simple bill, but a very important one. It follows up on work that was done last session that I think was done initially in this committee, House Bill 2020, which looked at ways of streamlining our state agencies so that the ratio between line employees and managers could be increased to 11 to 1. And that there was a lot of discussion, ultimately I think a lot of support for that bill in both chambers. One thing about that bill, though, was that it would not implement its recommendations until the next biennium. Since then, I don't need to tell you, it's become clear to us that we continue to be in a budget shortfall, and the savings from House Bill 2020, we need them now. And there really is no reason that we cannot implement those efficiencies right now. And more to the point, this is the time to do it, because as I think you probably know, for demographic reasons, as well as just, you know, reasons tied to the economy, a lot of people from the agencies are retiring right now. And we have a lot of vacancies in positions. If we are going to make the adjustments to the agencies to reach this target, now is the time to do it. That will be the least disruptive on the agencies. And so therefore, you know, we're coming before you with this motion, which I think by the end of the day, our ability to pass this bill is going to really help us to balance the budget and get out of here at the end of the month. And so that's another very important reason I would urge you to support this bill. We project the savings from this bill to be about $16 million in this biennium, dollars that are very, very critical. So with that, I am happy to answer any questions that you might have about the bill. And I know there are others who can testify, you know, from the ranks.
Representative Dimber, I don't know what your time constraints are. We could go ahead and ask questions of you now or listen to other testimony and then ask.
I'm actually free till committee at 4, so I'm fine.
We'll go ahead and have the next testifier then.
Okay. Co-Chair Hobley, Co-Chair Wisnett, and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Robert Sisk. I'm an employee with Department of Administrative Services, and I'm a member of SEIU 503 and president of Sublocal 125. I'm here today to testify in support of HB 4131. With demand for many services at record levels and resources limited by reduced revenues, the state must ensure that its service delivery structures and processes operate as efficiently as possible. And one key area of potential cost savings is the ratio of frontline workers to supervisors and other managerial personnel in many state agencies. As we demonstrated last year, citing an analysis of payroll data and anecdotal evidence, the ratio of frontline workers to supervisors and managers in state government is far too low. The issue of worker-to-manager ratio ranked second on the list of priorities for frontline workers. Frontline workers in almost all agencies raise the issue of high number of managers as concern. In addition to resolving concerns for these workers, reducing the span of control can save significant resources that go to protecting services that Oregonians rely on. Consequently, the legislature took the critical first step of setting a standard to the passage of HB 2020, which established an 11-to-1 staff-to-supervisor standard for the 2013-15 budget and required the Department of Administrative Services to report this month on the staff-to-supervisor ratio and the staff-to-management ratio for all state agencies. Based on new analysis of more recent DAS payroll data and current staffing ratios for agencies subject to HB 2020, we estimate estimate that even a modest partial implementation of HB 2020, effective July 1st, improving the worker-to-supervisor ratio by one in 2013. For instance, instead of having an existing ratio of 3-1, there would be increased to a 4-1 ratio, would generate $21.8 million in savings for the general fund and $58.3 million in all funds. Thank you.
Thank you. Committee, do we have any quick questions?
Get Mr. Weeks first.
Well, we could go ahead and listen to Mr. Weeks first since he's on the phone. Mr. Weeks, you want to go ahead and provide testimony?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Co-Chair Holvey and Co-Chair Wisnett and members of the committee. I appreciate very much the opportunity you're giving me to speak here briefly. I'll try to be succinct here. I apologize for not being able to be there in front of you personally, but I am Gary Weeks. I spent 30 years in Oregon state government, managed four different state agencies under four different governors, and come before you today by phone to encourage you to careful review and consider House Bill 4131. As the two prior speakers have told you, this basically accelerates what you supported in session 2011 when you passed House Bill 2020. During the 31 years that I had in state government and managing different agencies, I had a lot of experience in trying to deal with difficult fiscal periods. Some of those you all will remember as well. And the effort that we're about here with this bill to try to achieve the right balance between employees and managers and supervisors is not really new. In 1989, when File Measure 5 was passed, which established our property tax limitations, that session began with the administration of Governor Roberts. And we had what was then, what we considered then, an unprecedented fiscal crisis. Now, when I compare to what you all have to deal with today, it seems modest, but at the time it was significant. And one of the things we did in 1989 as part of the executive branch was to deal with the span of control of managers and supervisors. And the target that the governor gave us at that time as agency heads was to try to achieve a 9-1 ratio, which in fact is a more conservative ratio than what the legislature has called for in House Bill 2020. During the governor's tenure, I served as the Director of Business and Consumer Services, and then later I was her Director of Administrative Services. And the way that we tried to achieve this span of control change was to, you know, give agencies targets, and we made exceptions to accommodate specific circumstances and needs that we could identify, because we didn't want to disrupt, like, caseworker workloads and things like that. But the fact was there was a reduction in 1990-91 of both the number of overall state employees and the number of management and supervisor employees, and the whole effort was coordinated by DAS, and we managed to use, for the most part, attrition to avoid layoffs. And it's a difficult challenge, there's no question about it. I mean, having had to do it, it wasn't fun as a state agency administrator. But when you're facing the time, as Representative Dembro and the last speaker indicated, where we don't have a whole lot of choices, and that's why I encourage you on this bill, is the timing is really right. 2011, we had 8,000 people apply for PERS retiree benefits. I was one of them. And the number of retirees was a 44% increase over the last 4 years and was large that year since 2003, when we had about 12,000 people, I think, apply for retirement in that year. So we have this surge of retirees that started last year and is going to continue because we've got 70,000 PERS eligible people. That's state, county, city, all the PERS eligible people. 70,000 are eligible to retire now on the basis of age and years of service. So this may be the best opportunity you've ever had to look at how you restructure the state's workforce. And as people have already said to you, increasing the ratio by just one produces significant savings for the general fund. Now, I had a quick conversation earlier today with Michael Jordan, your DAS administrator. We talked about the data and, you know, the extent in which we can achieve these kind of cuts and whether we have the right numbers. And I think those are good questions for Mr. Jordan to be raising. And, you know, we really need to take a good look at the data that's there and the extent in which we can make these savings. But clearly, there's an opportunity here to make some savings. And whether it's $20 million or $10 million, it's still significant resources that are available to help in a variety of programs. And I mean, for my particular interest, I've worked with vulnerable citizens most of my career, those that are elderly, the disabled, children's programs. And while whatever savings might be achieved here, we can't really direct them in any way. You do that. But it provides some resources for you to preserve what many will believe to be the most important services we have in this state. So I guess my point to you all is that we have done this before. We have an opportunity to do it again. It will require a good deal of flexibility for agency directors to manage this through without impacting direct client services. That can be done. And once you set the target at a one more person reduction or less of that amount, there are opportunities here for you to save some resources. And I guess finally, Mr. Chairman and co-chairs, I want to say as an aside, part of the problem that we have here is really a fundamental issue with our personnel system, which actually creates more people in management than need be. And I think Mr. Jordan could support that in his experience over the last year. And that's not something you're going to solve in a 30-day session, but it is something for you to keep in the back of your minds. And I've talked to some of you directly about this, that we really need to figure out how to establish a personnel system that gets us the right level of management for the line staff that we have. So with that very quick analysis, I appreciate you being willing to talk to me in this way, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you all might have. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And committee, we have two other people to testify, but I'd like to open it up for questions. We've got about 8 minutes left. And so I'd like to open it up for questions at this point. Questions? Representative Sheehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very supportive of 2020, and this, it took me a few times to read this, but I think I like this too, but I just want to make sure that, is there any way that this could be interpreted for a state agency to hire more public employees in order to reach that 11-to-1? And I'm being serious here. I think the current status of our budget probably precludes us from doing that, but I just want to prevent that unintended consequence of, you know, rather than cutting one of the supervisory roles, that we add a employee.
Mr. Co-chair and Representative Sheehan, that would be far from the intent of this bill, certainly. You know, it may be that at some time in the future, there'll be a time when the budget situation changes and there might be some growth in the agencies. We want, if that were to happen, we want there to be the discipline to maintain the proper ratio of line to manager, because no matter what our budget situation, we want our agencies to be as streamlined and efficient as they can be, and to really be prioritizing direct service to Oregonians.
Co-chairs, if I may respond to that too, that the budget that you've already established for this biennium creates position authority and position control, so it's really not possible for an agency to simply go out and hire more people in order to change the ratio. Because they're controlled by the position authority that's already established in the budget. So I don't think that's a likelihood at all.
Representative Cameron.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Weeks, maybe you can help answer this. I think that budget, that budget has FTE equivalents, if I'm not correct, doesn't separate out managerial versus frontline staff, right?
Representative and members of the committee, it doesn't. It has position control numbers, and it identifies the positions by whether they're management, supervisory, or classified staff. So it makes that kind of identification stuff. But there really isn't any way to jockey those numbers around so you could add a lot more classified without getting some authority either through DAS or coming to the legislature itself.
Follow up on me. Thank you. So, and I just write out an example here. If I have I guess it's an agency with 110 employees, they qualify under this, and they have 13 supervisors. What's to prevent me as the agency director to just say, I'm going to go to two of those employees, put them down as frontline, give them the option to go down to frontline employees, and now I have 11 supervisors and 112 employees, and I qualify for this, and yet I have very little, if any, savings.
Well, Representative, what prevents that is because people that are in management service or executive service also have rights. You just can't, as an agency, say, I'm going to rewrite this position description. You're now going to be a classified employee. That's not possible under the personnel rules we have right now. You have to be able to justify abolishing executive positions, management service positions, and then recreating them as classified positions.
Follow up. Well, then how do we implement this bill without doing that? Because it sounds what you just said is I can't just go up to a manager and say, I'm going to move you from this position to this position, or I'm going to terminate your position without justifying that.
Well, Representative and Chairs, I don't think this bill envisioned anything like that. I think this bill anticipates that the opportunity that's created by large numbers of people leaving state government will create the attrition that you need to, you know, not fill these positions. So what you'll effectively have is with the number of retirements that have occurred and will occur, you have positions that are going to be vacated, and you simply hold those vacant. And you fill the management positions, and you change your ratio, the way people are managed. I think that's what this bill envisions. And I don't want to speak for Representative Dembra, but I don't think the intent is to create layoffs, because that really whole new set of problems will be within the state budget with unemployment and things of that nature, swapping rights, so on like that.
So one last question, then, if I may.
Go ahead.
So if I'm in an agency that I just described with 110, 13, and I have nobody retiring for the next 2 or 3 years, I can't make this ratio.
You probably can't, and so you'd ask for an exception. That's why I say there needs to be some level of reasonable flexibility in here for agencies to manage the targets that you set. And for smaller agencies, I mean, this bill, of course, doesn't apply to any agency with less than 100. It applies to over 100. But if you simply have 100 and you have no retirements and no one leaving for other reasons besides retirement, then I would think that your Department of Administrative Services would have a process for creating exceptions within this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Roxanne Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Weeks, and we're going to have a presentation by DAS, which I think will be really good and essential to this. Beginning of last session in this committee and also in the Ways and Means process, I suggested to chairs that we look at management practices, which you mentioned, to bring down a cost of state government. I referenced vacant positions. I asked to look at span of control, elimination of deputies and assistants, and looked at span of control. That's why I was glad to sponsor House Bill 2020. You mentioned that you tried, I forgot what the year was, to get the 9-to-1 ratio. What stood in the way and why did that not happen?
Representative Winston, members of the committee, it did happen. We dramatically reduced the ratio. I have to apologize, I can't remember now if we actually reached the 9-to-1 ratio. But that was our target, and it was pursued fairly aggressively, as anybody who was around in those days could tell you. And there was a reduction of approximately 1,500 positions in state government. Many of those were management, some were classified positions, but there was significant reduction in 1989. during the Roberts administration. I mean, in my last year and a half of her administration, I was the director of administrative services. It was my job to preside over that. And as I said earlier, it's a difficult challenge. It's difficult to do, but you know, you can make it work. And particularly in that period of time, you know, there were positions vacant, and we were trying to take advantage of it. We were not trying to lay off people. Just as I think this bill does not envision mass layoffs in order to get you down to the right ratio. And you, Representative, you may have to ease your way into this. I mean, maybe the number that's being out there, 500, maybe that's not where you want to start. Maybe you want to start at a different level and say, let's try to achieve a reduction of 250 or so. Still going to give you millions of dollars in savings in the current biennium.
Have a question of Mr. Robert Sisk.
Sure.
Go ahead. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Sisk, in your letter, your next or third from the bottom paragraph, how many positions did you assume to get to the 21.8 million that we would have to eliminate?
You know, I couldn't answer that. Gary might be able to answer that better.
Mr. Weeks?
Yes, sir, representative members of the committee. I think that number assumes 540 positions. And again, you know, in my conversations with Mike this morning, I think it's important that we, you know, work with DAS to assure that we've got all the right positions counted, and that indeed that number would produce 21 million. We believe that's the case, and we got that number, I should say, from DAS personnel and DAS payroll records, which Mr. Gordon and I talked about this morning. But I think he believes there may have been some issues with the date which need to be resolved. But the point which we agreed on is we don't want to argue about the date. We want to talk about what's the opportunity here to change this ratio without having layoffs and without adjusting services to clients.
Thank you. I just have one question. I know it is spelled out in the bill, but the bill does anticipate all agencies. I would assume that includes the judiciary, the legislature, and I guess every state institution. Is that the intent of this bill as well?
Representative and members of the committee, I believe so. I guess I would defer to Representative Dembro as the sponsor of the bill, if I'm incorrect. So.
Yes, that was mm-hmm. directed at Representative Dembro.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir.
No, that's fine. So, actually, I'm not sure how to answer that. And maybe I can throw this question back to you all, because you talked about this back in doing 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Was that your anticipation that it also included the legislative and judicial branches? I was not thinking of that.
Yeah, we'll have to go back okay. and double check on the
implementation. And let me just say that you know, I am certainly open to any amendments that would allow for any necessary flexibility, you know, to help state agencies meet this goal. But I think that we do need to be really very firm about the goal, and to try to figure out a way to find these savings. And yes, there can. And probably in some cases should be exceptions, but they need to be kept very exceptional. That would be my intent here.
So I guess, you know, that's something we'll just have to deal with in the Ways and Means process, perhaps. But Representative Wisnett.
Thank you. Mr. Weeks, I want to go back to your expertise, since we may lose you. We do have DAS. We have a short period of time. But
extremely sure.
But my point is that when I looked at this and when I supported it, the higher up you go in an organization, the less likely you are to have 11 to 1. You may have to have 1 to 6 or 1 to 5. But the bill, the way it's written now, is just saying the whole organization, you have, is, I think Representative Cameron talked about looking at the whole organization and saying you have to reduce that, you know, that goal. Did you Do you have any comments on that, or do you see what I'm saying as far as it's easier to get 11 to 1 at the ground level, but the higher up you go in the organization, the more difficult it's going to be to get 11 to 1.
Those people should be more talented.
Yeah, Representative Wisnett and members of the committee, I think that what we're trying to address here are the number of layers of management that exist between the top and the line work. And what we're trying to do is skinny that down, make that fewer levels of management, because the more levels of management you have, the more difficult it is to communicate all your instructions and your intent to your line staff, and the more potential you have for a lot of finger pointing going on. If somebody says, well, I thought so-and-so was doing it at this level, or I thought so-and-so was doing it. So, in fact, you are looking at, across the agency, from the top to the line workers, how many levels of management do you have? And are all those levels of management really necessary to achieving the work of the line worker? That's the question to be asked in all of these management positions.
Thank you, Mr. Weeks. I'm going to have to move on now to a couple other testifiers because we have only 5 minutes left. I appreciate that. Your testimony. You can either stay on the line and listen or hang up, and maybe we'll talk some more later. Next up, I have Brian DeLashmet and Donna Bennett.
Is he going to stay on the phone so we know he's on the phone?
Mr. Chair, for the record, Brian DeLashmet. I'm here representing the Oregon State Police Officers Association, commonly called the Troopers. The questions that have been raised are questions that I was trying to work through. For example, Representative Cameron's question about the ratios and how it works as far as actually getting to those ratios. OSP, you're probably well aware that you authorized a couple of sessions ago an additional 39 troopers to be hired, and then have put that off for a number of renegotiations of the budget. You might also know that currently they have approximately, my understanding, about 40 positions that are being held open at the trooper level. So we're not even close to 24/7. So short of being able to hire additional troopers because of the budget, then how do you achieve the 11 to 1? Let me be very clear. My client and my corrections client, the AOCE, is very supportive and very much in favor of 11 to 1 higher ratios of line staff to management. We're just trying to figure out how you're going to achieve that, and by pressing this particular goal, what that actually does to an agency like OSP. And with that, I'll close. Thank you.
Thank you. And Ms. Bennett.
Thank you, Co-Chair Holvey and Co-Chair Wisnett and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Donna Sandoval Bennett, and I am the Chief Human Resource Manager, and I work within the Department of Administrative Services. Let me say at the outset that House Bill 2020, which you passed in the last session, required DAS to report to the Joint Ways and Means Committee on the ratio of public employees to managers. And DAS continues, even today, to take actions to provide that report will be given in compliance with the law. All agencies with 100 or more employees have provided the numbers of their supervisory personnel, supervisory non-management, and confidential employees within their workforce. These numbers are being gathered now, and they are being evaluated and collected and will be analyzed, and then we'll start working towards the 1 to 11 compliance. Prior to implementation, and I see the House Bill 4131 as a variation on the theme of House Bill 2020, let me tell you what we are doing at this point in time and what we would need to do even if this plan, this bill, called for an acceleration of 2020. What is happening now, or what will happen now, is that each agency's programs and needs are going to be assessed with regard to the management cuts. We are going to have to identify and have discussions with labor regarding seniority issues. If someone has to go back into a collective bargaining group, do they have any seniority or not? There are bumping and layoff issues. I appreciate that there is a hope that there will be enough retirements to offset this change in managerial numbers. I would be skeptical about that because retirements are not targeted. These management positions will be very targeted. We need to identify areas of risk, geographic needs, which you have mentioned, public health and safety concerns. Positions will have to be reclassified. There will be a change in benefits from management down to the classified status that will have to be evaluated. And there will have to be an integration of management into the classified and labor status. Those are all the issues, and they are key, important issues that we are looking at DAS as we move forward to implement 2020 by 2013. If you ask us to do that by July, that will be a daunting task.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And just a quick question about the daunting task, because I was looking at that date as well, thinking it was a pretty quick. What about halfway in between? Is that it's probably less daunting, but still a daunting task? Say October 1st.
I would have a hard time answering that because we have been so focused on 2013. Mm-hmm. Certainly, we could speculate on any date.
Okay. Yeah, that was probably not a fair question. Representative Smith.
So, looking at the bill, I wanted to respond to a couple of things and then respond to a couple of things.
2 minutes.
Okay, I'll go quick, but I think it's going to be pretty important. So first of all, my reading of the bill does not say that we've got to get to 11-1 by July. It says we've got to do one better. Instead of just doing a plan, we got to actually get started.
That's true, Representative Smith.
Okay. The second thing I want to say is my concern is the purpose behind 2020 was to actually get moving. Our fear was when the budget writers and the people who get most input on the budget tend not to be frontline workers, that the people who do have some input on the budget would dilly-dally maybe a little bit.
Sure.
And so we need to do something. And the concern is 2020 is great if it's a plan, but doing a little bit of something by, you know, just increasing by one seems relatively reasonable. In response to Patrick, I don't have a concern. It did occur to me, don't have a concern of adding spots, not only because we won't have the money anytime soon, but because generally that manager won't have a heck of a lot of power to say, oh, I want to keep my job, so I'm going to add seven people. Right? I think practically speaking, it'll be hard to do even in higher budget times. And beyond that, I'll refer to Representative Dembro. I'll defer to Representative Dembro's point. Yes, even if there is some time we ever want to hire, let's say another teacher, that we want to focus on hiring teachers as we expand. So I think it's eminently reasonable. I think we should totally do it. I do have a little bit of a question about if we want any give in certain. A lot of the question around 2020 was, well, one agency or bureau might be different than another agency or bureau. Judiciary might be different than another. And if it said we're going to do 11-1 by July, I'd have a concern. But by one seems relatively reasonable. So I guess that's a comment.
Representative Cameron, shortly.
Yeah, real quick, a couple questions. How many agencies and commissions, et cetera, fall under the 100 employee mark? And if you don't have that answer today, that's fine. You can get back to the committee on it.
You know, Chair Holvey and Chair Wisnett, Representative Cameron, I'm in my mind right now looking at the sheet that I look at almost daily. I'm going to give you that we're going to be close to about 22 different agencies and commissions.
That'd be great. And then how many employees total does that represent? If you could get that back to the committee, that would be good.
I can tell you that.
The last comment I want to make is I heard that manager doesn't have to worry about hiring seven employees because he gets to keep his job until he retires. That's what we heard today, that position doesn't go away until he retires. So I wouldn't need to hire seven employees to keep my job.
But then the bill doesn't matter. The point would be that elimination of a position.
Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Co-Chair. That elimination of a position can be easier than reclassifying a position under the contract, right? Mistreating a worker is different than saying, I'm sorry, the position no longer exists because we have budget cuts.
Can I respond to that very quickly?
Very quickly.
Chair Holvey, Chair Wisnett, Representative Smith. Whether we go to 11-1 now or we drop it by one, we will be having to go through the same steps in any event. because all of those employee rights that are triggered by House Bill 2020 will have to be honored regardless of the amount of employees.
Thank you. I appreciate that, committee. We're going to have to close now. I know that this conversation will continue. Well, I don't know for sure. I know it will continue in the form of 2020. Whether this committee will continue on this bill, if we do, we will have more discussion on this particular item. I don't believe we're quite done. So with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4131. And adjourn the Committee on General Government and Consumer Protection. Thank you.